Okay, so thank you everyone for standing by, and welcome to today's question and answers call for students of the Effective Email Prospecting for Freelancers Who Hate Cold Calling program from International Freelancers Academy. So before we get started, I just want to cover a couple quick housekeeping items. This call will be available for replay by Friday this week. I'll be sending you an email with replay access information as soon as it's ready, so watch out for that. The replay will also be available on the product download site, so you can look for it there as well. For today's call, everyone is muted. All attendees are muted. Ed will be answering the questions he received by email over the past few weeks, and that's probably going to take us the entire full hour. So with those things out of the way, Ed, I'll turn the call over to you.
Great. Thanks, Crystal, and welcome, everyone. So for those of you who have been to these calls before, you know that this is pretty informal. I mean, there's just nothing produced or rehearsed about this call. Basically, a lot of you have been submitting questions over the last few weeks. We've been compiling them. I made some notes here this morning, and I've gotten a couple here in the last few minutes that I just went ahead and printed out, and I'll answer here at the end. So, you know, I don't have anything scripted here, and hopefully this will answer some of the questions many of you have, and some you haven't thought of, but other students have had, and we'll give you some good insights into you know, how to make this strategy work. So I'm just going to dive right into the first question here. By the way, I'm keeping these anonymous, so I'm not going to mention any names. If you submitted the question, I think you'll recognize it. First question says, if you can't find someone's email address and they are an active user of LinkedIn and or Facebook, is it worth trying to send the email prospecting letter or the email prospecting message to these people? And I would say yes. I would try email first, for sure. But if you can't get a hold of it, if you can't find it through all the means that we talked about in the program, definitely try them on LinkedIn or Facebook, whatever seems to be more appropriate. You know, some people are funny about their Facebook accounts. They use it more for personal reasons. So if you can tell that that's the case with this individual, you may want to stay off Facebook and try LinkedIn first. The biggest reason why I still suggest email first is that many people don't have their social media alerts going to their main email address, meaning their work email address. They have it going somewhere else. So if you contact them there, it might be a while before they get to it, and then it might get buried in a bunch of other stuff that you know, a lot of people will have a lot of different things going there, and they don't check it very often, and then they get overwhelmed, and they don't pay too much attention. So it's easy to get lost there. So try the first year, go for the work email address, but if all else fails, hey, can't hurt. In fact, sometimes it can actually give you a little bit of an edge. Again, depending on how that person uses their social media account, it could stand out a little more, especially with the approach that I teach here in this program, if you use that approach. All right, another question. When sending a link with email, should it be an example of how I've accomplished a task related to the trigger event, a piece presenting my thoughts, ideas on a particular topic, or something else? You know, it doesn't need to be something related to the trigger event, and it doesn't need to be the same thing every time. I like to just use whatever feels right depending on who I'm going after and what kind of meaningful connection I'm making. But if it is a trigger event, it doesn't have to be tied to that. So if the trigger event was, you know, let's say a merger with a competitor, you know, it doesn't have to be a link to an article related to mergers, for example. I like to use the link as a credibility builder to send them somewhere so they can better see that I'm a credible resource, that I'm a credible professional. So either an article with thoughts on a relevant topic, it doesn't have to be, again, on a trigger event, or it doesn't have to be necessarily a sample. It could be a report or a white paper on a relevant topic as well. It doesn't need to be just an article. a case study showing how you helped a similar organization solve a problem. And again, the problem that you help solve doesn't need to be related to the trigger event, but it does need to be relevant to this organization or this prospect you're approaching, of course. You can send them a link to a page with a carefully chosen set of samples. You know, when I mentioned sending them links to a samples page on the site, I don't go into a lot of detail there, but if that's going to be the way for you to go, and for a lot of professionals, that's really a huge credibility builder, especially if you're a designer. If you do anything, it's just hard to explain visually, you know, hard to explain in words, videographer, photographer, any of the visual arts. I wouldn't just create one page with a ton of samples. Okay, that's just overwhelming. What I would do is I would create a bunch of pages and, you know, go thematic here. Select different samples based on different themes, and then have that toolbox, if you will, of samples, two or three per page, that's it, and send the prospect to the page that you think would work the best. So the idea there wasn't to send them to a list of all your samples. Go thematic, go by the type of project that they are. You know, there are many different ways of doing that. You'll know what's best for you. But send them something. You know, again, with all these emails, every component in there really has to be as relevant as possible. It has to come across as if you're picking them specifically because you are. So anything you can do in any of these elements to be as targeted and specific as possible, that all goes in your favor. All right, so let's see, another question. Keeping track of who I've emailed, who I need to email, and various follow-ups is a daunting task. I recently tested Salesforce.com, but it is way too complicated. I currently use Google Apps along with its contacts and task applications. Is there a relatively easy way to manage this process? There are many, many different tools out there to track your interactions with your prospects and your clients. The key is to pick something that works for you and to stick with it and be diligent about tracking the information. So when I started, I actually used a combination of things. I use a spreadsheet for some of my efforts, prospecting efforts, and I would just have a different column for every contact touch point. And that was good, but then it got out of hand pretty quickly. And then I moved into ACT. I had an older version of ACT I went ahead and installed, and ACT is ACT, Alpha, Charlie, Tango. And that while ACT is one of the most popular contact management systems out there. What I love about it is that it's very simple. It's been around for a long time. And it allowed me to track all my attempts and then any responses so I could have a full history of my contact attempts, all my interactions with a prospect or a client. That way I knew when it was time to contact them again. I could also pre-schedule my next attempt, and that's key. So let me give you some names of solutions that I've heard on our fan page. Some people have posted some ideas, some tools that are working for them. ACT is one of them. I've mentioned that one. Another one is Zoho. I keep hearing about Zoho. Z as in zebra, O-H-O, Zoho. Oprius is another one that keeps popping up, O-P-R-I-U-S. And another one that we recently saw on our fan page, somebody commenting on it, was Really Simple Systems. I just looked them up. It's reallysimplesystems.com. So look into those. I now use Salesforce.com, so I moved from spreadsheets to ACT to Salesforce.com. My last job, we had been using Salesforce.com for 2 or 3 years. I was already used to it, and a couple of years ago they came out with a stripped-down version of it. It's $5 a month, so you pay annually $60 a year. It's online. It's in the cloud. It's easy to use for me because I'm used to the way that it works. I'm used to the terminology. And I like being able to access that information from anywhere because it is online. So that's what works for me. Most of these tools have a free trial, So check them out. Put a little bit of sample data in there. Use it and see how you feel about it. You know, they're all going to have somewhat of a learning curve, so just be mindful of that. But the key thing is, again, be diligent about tracking all your attempts so you have a real good, accurate history and you're not contacting someone the day before you followed up with them. That would be kind of embarrassing. And just as important, make sure that every time you make an attempt, you go ahead and schedule your next attempt at that point. That way, you know, 6 weeks later, let's say, when it's time to go ahead and follow up, you have a reminder set. That you fire up your computer that morning, you turn on your contact management system, and you see that it's time to go ahead and follow up with them. That is huge. And that's, I mean, in my career, that's been one of the things that has really helped me is the fact that I always set reminders for follow-up attempts. I never had to worry about, okay, gosh, when do I need to contact that person again? And then they would slip through the cracks. So if you're contacting a lot of people, make sure to set those reminders and make sure whatever system you use has that feature. Most of them do have that feature. All right, another question. If I'm sending email to a cold contact, is it better to send it to a direct email address or through LinkedIn? So this is a similar question from the last one. Assuming it's not a close enough connection that I can ask for an introduction through my contacts. I'm thinking that my LinkedIn profile has recommendations and sales blurbs on it, as well as a link to my website, but I don't want to annoy someone who might see me as spamming their LinkedIn inbox. So again, I would try email first. Many people don't have their social media stuff going to their main email address, but you know, if else fails, go try them in LinkedIn or Facebook. And you know what? I mean, test this stuff. You may want to try sending a few via social media and see what you get. I still say that email is going to end up winning in the end, but with some people, you never know, especially if they're very active in some of these sites. So it might be worth a try. The key, though, is to, just because it's a different platform, just because it's Facebook or LinkedIn, don't change the approach that we've taught in this program. So use the same format. Use the same approach. Make those meaningful connections. Be relevant. Be highly personalized. And I don't think the platform is going to matter as much in that case. Another question is, how long is any one event reasonably good for? Say a business wins a local award. How much time after the fact can you use this trigger event as part of your email prospecting? Does it differ for different kinds of events? If so, how would you separate those events, and what general expiration dates would you put on them? That's a good question. Yeah, I'd say it really depends on what the trigger event is and how it may impact what you'll be proposing for the prospect or what kind of meaningful connection you're trying to make. If it's an award, for example, you could probably go a little longer. I mean, you know, the award itself is not necessarily creating a very small window of opportunity for you. It's something you can leverage a few weeks later and say, hey, you know, I just came across this. I wanted to congratulate you. I saw this, and I think this is great. But there are other trigger events that are a little more time-sensitive. In fact, I'd say most trigger events are fairly time-sensitive. The general rule in business today is that, you know, the shelf life of these things is getting shorter and shorter, and I'd say in most cases 2 to 4 weeks after that trigger event happened. So you don't have a lot of time in most cases, but I think you need to look at your profession. You need to look at what it is and how it impacts your approach to the prospect and how relevant you'll be, say, you know, 2 months after this event happened. Also, you need to factor in, and we really didn't touch on this in the course, but factor in how the event impacts the person you're approaching. So you need to think about that as well. One example is, let's say that you learned of a company's record quarterly profits. There was an announcement on that. Now, that might not necessarily impact a marketing manager if that's your marketing manager is one of your prospects. But let's say landing a big high-profile account will definitely impact the creative director of a small ad agency, for example. So, and that could be, you know, weeks later or even a month or two later, because maybe you can't help there, but now you're making a connection with someone who could potentially hire you, and you've leveraged something that's very relevant and meaningful to them. It impacts them in a deeper way than record quarterly profits to a marketing manager of a Fortune 500 company. So I hope that makes sense. I think you need to look at what it is, what the trigger event is, your profession, how that impacts the work you do, and also look at the person you're approaching and how that trigger event impacts their job, what they do every day, and how they would hire or when they would hire a freelancer, if at all, to help them with that effort. Maybe you can help them then. A lot of these trigger events, you know, your window of opportunity would have actually disappeared by the time the trigger event is announced. So keep that in mind. But you still have a window in terms of a long-term window of opportunity. So maybe you can't land something for this specific win that they had or this specific event, but you're planting seeds for next time something big happens. Of course, don't just stop there. Make sure to nurture that relationship until the timing is right with that prospect. Okay, another question here. If I have a mutual connection willing to actually make the introduction, do they need to, let's see here. Okay, do they need to say any more other than they've worked with me and I've done great work for them? It seems like this email would be more general than anything I was writing directly to the prospect, but just wanted your thoughts. So in other words, if you're having someone make the introduction, should you give them all of the verbiage that we've taught you in this program so they can use it in the intro, or should you just make a very standard generic intro? Absolutely, you want to make it easy on them. Just let them make a generic introduction. You want to make it easy on that individual. All they need to do is basically say, hey, Jane, meet Jack. Jack, meet Jane. Jack, you did some work for us last quarter. You know, just fabulous stuff. I highly recommend him. We'll be using him again. Thought you could use, you know, anything like that. Very quick, very short. All you want is for them to broker that introduction. That alone will make a huge difference. If they try to do any more than that, it's going to come across as if you really put them up to it, and you know, this is really a sales job more than anything. It's got to be authentic. It's got to be genuine. So let them do their thing, and make it, you know, when you pitch them on the idea and you ask for the favor, let them know that's all you expect. Hey, just a quick intro, you know, introducing us, and, you know, I can take it from there, whatever makes sense. And your chances of them doing it will go up. All right, another question here. Connections, other than those through people, can be hard to find for small travel businesses in my area. Could the beginning of the busy season for local tourism, for example, be reason enough to connect, or is it too vague to be a meaningful connection? Yeah, I think something like that is too vague. You know, the fact that, hey, it's the busy season for local tourism, we should connect, that sort of thing. I mean, I think it's too generic. You need to pick something a little bit more specific. So what I would suggest in that case, if it's just, you know, you can't find anything else, trigger events just might not be something you'll be using all the time with companies like this. You may want to explore the third way of establishing a meaningful connection, which is to leverage a notable accomplishment that you've had. So let's say an award you've won, a list of two or three notable clients, maybe your whole client roster, a recent project you've completed for a client, someone they would recognize. Or, you know, one idea that a lot of people don't explore is you could author something. Say a simple, it doesn't have to be anything extremely complicated and, you know, a huge undertaking. A simple and short self-published booklet, for example, or a simple course that you've put together. If you did something like that, not only would it give you a lead-generating tool or something you could use as a calling card when you're reaching out to prospects, but it would allow you to refer to yourself as the author of whatever, the Travel Marketer's Guide to Boosting Local Tourism, something like that. And all it would be is maybe a collection of strategies, best practices, things you know work for local travel businesses, local travel companies. You don't have to give everything away. A lot of people are afraid to do something like this because, gosh, if they know all my tricks, then why would they hire me? Well, in most cases, that fear is unfounded. The fact is that, people don't just hire you for your knowledge and your systems. They hire you because they need your expertise, your insights for a specific project, and they need someone to execute. So, some people could take that information and, do this on their own. But the fact is most people won't. And I think the benefits of putting something like that together far outweigh the risk of someone taking it and then trying to do it on their own, or a competitor trying to duplicate your systems or your process. I wouldn't worry about that too much. Something like this, think about all the different ways you could do it. I just mentioned like three of them. And, that would allow you to, in an email, position yourself as the author of X. So something to think about. The other thing I would start doing, you may not find a lot of stuff in the news for these companies, but I would start monitoring the social media accounts of your key prospects, especially Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, whatever they seem to be using quite a bit. I found that companies, businesses, organizations, they tend to reveal an incredible amount of valuable information in their profiles and in their Twitter feeds and Facebook pages. I'm not sure what it is. I have a theory that a lot of these organizations are really hungry for engagement. They know they have to be there. They know they have to be on Facebook. They have to be on Twitter. And so they're just doing their best. They're really trying to start conversations. They're engaging. They're trying to engage their prospects. And they're putting a lot out there. I mean, certainly a lot more than companies and organizations were doing just a few years ago. The cool thing is they're doing it to engage your prospects, but many times that's really valuable information you can use as a freelancer trying to approach these organizations for some work. So monitor that, because a lot of what they're posting could be valuable intelligence to develop a really strong and powerful, meaningful connection. And I think the fact that, especially if someone's really trying to do something there on Facebook and try to get something going in their Twitter feed, the fact that you can show them that you've been keeping an eye on them and what they're doing, that alone could really impress them. So you might have an opportunity here that you haven't thought of that could be huge for you. All right, another question here. Recently, I was looking at the website of a well-known firm in my niche, and I noticed that their case studies have room for improvement. Question, can I tell the company's marketing director diplomatically that I'm contacting her because I saw her company's case studies and have some easy-to-implement ways for making them even stronger? All right, so this is an area where you have to be careful, and I talked about this in the program a little bit about not calling their baby ugly. Nobody wants you to call their baby ugly, right? You can be diplomatic, but this is such a sensitive area for a lot of people, that a lot of prospects, that even just insinuating that what they have out there is not good could do more harm than good. Now, I don't have facts to prove this, okay? This is just anecdotal information from, my clients, prospects, from myself, as a company out there who's approached every once in a while about some of the things I've put out. People don't mind constructive criticism, but you have to be very, very careful. And when there's this dynamic of, potential vendor to a prospect, you really have to be careful how you state it. So I'm not saying don't do it. I'm just saying be very careful. It sounds like you're a writer, obviously. So, you know, you'll be able to message that in a way that will come across the right way, hopefully. But, you know, what I would do is I would use, instead of doing that, the standard approach we've discussed in the program. So I would establish a meaningful connection, but then I would focus my value statement and maybe my soft offer on something directly related to case studies and how you specialize in creating really compelling stories, and include a link to a couple of very relevant samples, as we've discussed earlier in this call. And do that, so kind of go about it, you know, go in through the back door, and don't point directly at things they're doing wrong. And I think if they see what you have and why you're different in that area, and maybe some of the pieces that, some of the elements you include in your work that other people don't include and they're not including in their own pieces, they'll put two and two together. So again, I think this is just a matter of preference and what you feel comfortable with. You may want to try both approaches. Maybe you do feel comfortable being a little bit more direct, and if you do, you know, just try it. Just be careful, I guess, is the bottom line here. Okay, another question here. You mentioned that using an invitation to an event is not the way to go as part of your hard sell, and your explanation of why that is makes good sense. My question is this. I am new to freelancing, and I'm setting up a free workshop for one of my target markets in the near future. I was going to use a direct email, these emails to introduce myself and invite prospects to attend this workshop. What should I do now? Do I risk looking like an email blast and still send the emails out with the workshop information, or do I mail the workshop information to them and then follow up with a direct email, or is it the other way around? Should there be time in between, and how much? Because of the industry, I need to hold the workshop in the early fall. Between now and then, I need to provide the workshop info, making sure it is at least a month in advance so they can plan it into the schedule. Okay, so it sounds like you've decided to go ahead and hold the workshop. You have it scheduled, and you're trying to fill seats. And you're trying to use this strategy to do that. I would approach it a little bit differently. I would actually start with a physical letter and to all prospects, and then I would do an email maybe a week or so later. But then I would have it come across very personalized, like we've described in this program. So I would use that approach. Start with a kind of a general letter that's not highly personalized. The follow-up email a week or 10 days later will be much more personalized. And then maybe include a link to the actual invitation. So they're not really sure, they can't remember what this is all about, or they want more details, they can click through and get that information. So, this is going to be extra work if you do it this way, but I think you're going to have to find something different about each prospect that you can mention if you're going to use email in here. Otherwise, it will come across as a blast. Now, I will tell you that, and I'm sure you know this, events are definitely very hard to fill, especially today. And it depends on the industry, but it's hard to get people to take time out of their day to attend a live on-site event. So, I mean, you got that challenge to start with, and no matter what approach you use to promote it, it's going to be a challenge. So I think really the bigger question here is more about how you're going to position the event. I think that's what I would really focus on more than, you know, what should I use first and email versus direct mail. What I would do is, rather than making it sound like a one-directional workshop only, where, you know, there's going to be a presenter and she's going to teach and the attendees are going to learn, position it more as an educational and networking event, maybe a time to share ideas with your peers in a non-sales, non-pressure environment. I think that's going to come across better, and people are going to respond better to that message than, you know, an instructional, I'm going to teach you something. So consider doing something along those lines, having a lot of networking, a lot of idea sharing, breakout sessions, sharing of best practices, and then position yourself as the industry expert and thought leader who's going to lead that event, and then explain why you're credible, of course, because you got to back that up. So I think that's actually the most important thing, is how you position it, and then how you message it, I mean, how you fill the seats, how you announce it is almost secondary, because a great strategy with email and direct mail is going to fail if it doesn't sound like something that's going to be worthwhile and it's going to feel like a sales event. Were they going to be pressured, or are they going to be pitched on something? Okay. Let's see here. Okay, here's another question. What if you're not only unable to find an email address for the contact person, but are not able to find an email address for the company in general? For example, several bed and breakfasts in my area have a contact form either on their site or on a B&B Canada site, but no other way to contact them online. Should you send your crafted email via their submission form on their site? Do you submit a request for their email address at that point so you may contact them by email? Or should you just move right into calling or mailing them a letter instead? These business owners are not web savvy and are not on sites such as LinkedIn or Jigsaw. Yeah, good question. So they're still businesses, but they're not very web savvy. They're not going to have, you know, social media profiles. Their address is going to be very hard to find. If you've tried all the methods I talked about, I believe that was module 2, find email addresses, then yes, I would use the contact form. That's really your only option. But then I would be especially careful not to come across as a mass emailer or a spammer. So make sure that you make that connection, that meaningful connection, immediately in the subject line and in your first line. Don't warm them up. Get right to the point. I would then follow up with a short letter that basically uses the same copy as that email. So you know, print that out and mail it to them, and then I would consider following up with a phone call. So try that with a few and see what you get. I think for a lot of these people, it's that contact form is really the only way they have to communicate with others online. So that may be your only option. All right, another question here. I asked several past clients for referrals, and they all say that they will pass on my contact information to their contacts. Should I insist on them providing their contact info instead? I don't want to be pushy. Good question. I think it's all about how you ask initially. I think if you ask the right way, you can kind of lead the prospect into giving you what they want in the way you want it, rather than leaving it open for them to, you know, do it however they'd like. So, you know, we could talk about referrals for a long time here, but one way I would approach it, first of all, I always ask for referrals when I get kudos from a client. So we're reviewing something, or I call them to follow up on something I created, just to see how it went, and they say that was great. It worked out great. So what I would do is at that point, I would go ahead and ask for a referral. So while they're happy, go ahead and ask. That is usually the best time to ask for these things, rather than calling them out of the blue and asking for referrals. So that's one thing. Train yourself to ask every time you get kudos, every time they have very positive feeling towards you and they're expressing something positive. The other thing is how you ask it. So rather than saying, hey, would you mind sending me to some of your friends or referring me to some people, which is how most people ask, here's a question I ask. I said, do you know one or two colleagues who may need help with X? All right, so here's why I asked that. So instead of saying, you know, can you send me to some of your colleagues, I actually asked for just one or two people. because it's there's less commitment there. I'm not asking you to send me go through your whole Rolodex and you know match me with everyone who could be a potential prospect. I'm asking you to just send me to one or two. The other thing is I try to focus on a specific type of project who may need help with X. So I pick one or two, you know, who may need help, who somebody who's having trouble with writing case studies or creating white papers. So I get very, very specific. It's easier to think of people when you get very specific and you give them examples. People will think of potential prospects for you or referrals for you a lot faster, a lot easier if you do that. You're not making them do much of the work. So try that. Do you know one or two, you know, colleagues who may need help in this area, you know, with their website? Are you hearing them complain a lot about this? Who do you know who's been, you know, complaining or who seems to have trouble in this area? That's another way of asking. And then I would just ask, oh, great, would you mind making an email introduction? So that's the second part to this. So instead of saying, great, well, you know, would you mind passing my info to them, go ahead and lead the discussion. Tell them what you want. Would you mind making an email introduction? Because when you do that, you're both going to be copied on the email. And then that way you can take it over versus depending on them to take that next step and to follow through. I've had good luck with that approach. I would try something along those lines, and I bet it will work better for you. Okay, this next question is kind of long, but I think it's important to read the whole thing because there's some good context in here for my answer. I have really pinned myself into a corner from which it is difficult to market. For 20 years, all my client work has been with a single Fortune 100 company located in my metro area. I have felt as though not all my eggs were in the same basket since I worked for several different divisions and several departments within those divisions. Things come along for 18 and a half years with me being super busy servicing this one corporation. I always had an abundance of work. When one division was not handing out work, another would be. And I could show all my work samples to people within the corporation, regardless of which division they were created for. Things started to crumble for me when that company decided last year to fire most of their marketing communication staff and send all that work to a New York agency. So they cut out all their local freelancers and even their corporate staff. This year it's happening with the other major division that I've worked for. So I'm in a whole new ball game now, and I must generate clients outside of this corporation. My problem is I don't feel that I'm at liberty to post their work on my website, so it's hard to show samples of what I can do. Even when calling on outside prospects, I feel skittish about sharing this corporation's materials. I've worked on some sample one-pagers, samples, like you guys teach, but my designer has not yet laid them out, so I don't yet have them in a format I can share. So I've been pondering what I might be able to do to share as part of my soft offer. Okay, so the biggest question, so the first question here is, okay, so I don't feel I have samples I can share, so what can I use as my soft offer? Keep in mind that samples is just one thing you can use. I actually prefer, and, you know, it really depends on your field. For me, I prefer to use knowledge, insights, information, in the way of an article, a series of articles, a report, a white paper. I like to use those sorts of things as my soft offer rather than samples. In most cases, it really depends on who I'm approaching. But let's say that that's not going to fly. You don't have to be a writer, by the way, to create this. There are many different ways. You have knowledge in you that if you can find someone, if you don't feel comfortable writing it, if you can trade services with a colleague who can do that, that's one way. You can find affordable writers online who could do that for you. You can, we could kind of outline your ideas and speak them into a recorder, MP3 recorder, and have a writer then not only transcribe but really flesh all that out and put it together for you. So there are many different ways of getting this. And, content really is king. It doesn't matter if you're a writer, photographer, designer, software developer. Good content is always going to be, it's always going to make a great soft offer, a great thing to send a prospect to show them, display your expertise, show them what you know, show them what you're made of, and kind of what your process is. But if you know, you don't want to go that route, or if you're also looking to showcase your samples, that's going to be stronger, that's fine. I would suggest creating what this lady, I believe it's a lady, started doing, which is create what we call portfolio one sheets. And a portfolio one sheet essentially is, instead of, you know, let's say that you wanted to showcase a website or a white paper that you worked on, instead of, you know, showing the whole sample, what you're doing is you're taking a snapshot of, let's say, if it's a website, the home page, or if it's a white paper, you know, one or two pages. And you're creating snapshots of those and then creating a one-page document. It could be one page on both sides, so two total pages, that show that snapshot. But instead of putting all the focus on the actual document or the website, what you're doing is creating kind of a story of, okay, this was the project, here are the project specifics, this was the customer's challenge, and this is what I created for them. And then, if possible, if you have that information, okay, these have been the results. You know, the client is super happy, they've been able to do this, or, you know, whatever. So, you're taking away the emphasis on the actual, you know, document that you created for this company, or deliverable, and you're adding a little bit of color to it. You're putting it in context. Now, as far as the question about, I don't know, I'm not sure, I don't feel comfortable using this company's samples, a couple of things. First of all, are you sure? Are you sure that you can't use them? I would look at your contract if you have one. Now, obviously, you've been working for this company for 20 years. You may just be working on verbal okays. I know I use a contract for virtually every project. Once I've been working with someone for a long time, I kind of get away from it. But at least for the first, you know, six or eight projects, I use a project agreement. I call it a fee agreement. And one of the stipulations is that the client agrees to allow me to use these pieces as samples. The only exception is if there's something in there that's sensitive or they don't want me to share outside. So that's fine. I will be... you know, I'll be very careful with that. I will only use what's been published for, you know, they have out there, period, for everybody to see or to download. So, and, you know, hopefully you have someone you can still ask, somebody you know who's still left. But at least try. I mean, I think it's better to ask and get a no than to not ask and not do it because you're afraid to get a no or you're not sure what they'll say. Because, you know, if you don't ask, you're not going to use it. But if you ask, there's a chance they'll say, sure, no problem. Or, you know, it sounds like there's so many changes there. Your question or their response or whatever will get lost in the shuffle. And then no one will really care. Now, it all depends, you know, how you feel about all this. You know, different people are willing to take different chances, more risks than others. Something else you might want to consider is instead of posting these samples on your site, just, you know, these are in a private part of your website. And just select a handful of samples that you think would be wonderful. Nothing that's sensitive. Pick something maybe that's a little old that's still very relevant, want to make a good sample. And create these one sheets and only send them out to prospects that you've already qualified. So that's something else to consider. So you're not posting that on your site for everybody to see and download. You're being very selective, and you're only showing that. Again, you know, I don't know how you feel about that, but, you know, it's just another idea. But, you know, it's I can only imagine. I mean, after 20 years, this has got to be pretty scary for you. So, keep in mind, this is not all going to happen overnight. So, you know, just get out there. I would go to I would start implementing strategies that are going to give you the biggest results the quickest. Networking, you know, this email, a prospecting approach, it's something you can do daily or on a weekly basis. But, you know, don't be afraid to leverage your contacts, you have people in your network. That'd probably be the first place I'd go to. And you just keep contacting people, get your name out there, make sure they understand what you're doing, what you're looking for. And, you know, your first couple of clients, your first couple of projects may not be ideal, but, you know, at least you'll get going, you'll get samples from other companies, you'll get some activity going, and that, from a psychological standpoint, will really give you a big boost, which you would need at this point. I know anybody would. All right, another question here. How do I make sure that my email reaches in, the inbox and is open and read? You know, there's no foolproof way of doing this. I think, you know, as far as reaching the inbox, there's really not much you can do that to control that. But as far as open and read, so we went into that great detail in the course. I mean, the biggest thing is you have to establish that meaningful connection right away, and you have to allude to that in the subject line. And that first sentence has got to get right to the point. It's got to continue the message that you started in the subject line, which is explaining to the prospect, essentially, this is why I'm contacting you specifically, Mrs. Prospect. This is not a mass email. Of course, you're not saying this, but this is what it's got to communicate. This is not a mass email. I've chosen you, and I have something, a message specifically for you, and here's why. So that is the biggest thing. If you walk away with just one thing from this program, I hope that that's it, because that's what makes this approach so different from any other email prospecting approach out there as far as, you know, in business to business. I'm not talking about mass emailing, you know, consumers or any of that. There was a second question from the student. How do I gauge if my emails are being effective in terms of generating leads? For instance, what parameters should I check that it's working well? And what can I do to improve so that I get more clicks and more leads? You know, I think you need to track your progress individually. So, you know, you might need more than a spreadsheet, like we talked about earlier in the call. You might need to invest in a contact management system and track your progress there and see, okay, who's responding. You know, hopefully you invest in something that allows you to run some simple reports, and then you can tag different prospects based on their responsiveness. So, you know, you can create some custom fields that allow you to, you know, indicate, let's say, I mean, it all depends how detailed you want to get with this. You used a trigger event with this one. With this one, you leverage mutual connection. With this other one, you leverage a notable accomplishment. You can actually state which one. So let's say you have a handful of things you're going to approach people with, and you're going to tailor them depending on the prospect. And then you can run a report at the end of the month or after a couple of months and see what's working better. You know, even because all these approaches are highly personalized, your results from such a report aren't going to be statistically valid because there are so many variables within each email that could have really triggered something in each prospect. You can't really say it was a subject line or it was my value statement or it was the fact that, you know, that I mentioned that, you know, I knew Jill at Acme Company. But I think if you look deeper into each, you'll start seeing some patterns and you'll see what's working better and what's not working. But there's one thing that's going to be very easy to track, and that is, okay, I sent so many emails after 1 month and I've engaged so many prospects. Doesn't mean you've gotten so many clients yet, so you've engaged, you start a conversation, some dialogue with X number of prospects, and you've landed so many clients. So those are the metrics that I would follow, at least those three. Number of emails sent, number of conversations started, number of clients landed. Do that, keep track of that every month, and you know, see where you are, and then make adjustments as needed. I think that's going to give you a lot of encouragement, too. I've heard from a few of you who, after trying, you know, just sending out a few emails, I've already started some good conversations with prospects. So those of you who have taken action, obviously it's working. So keep it up. Okay, and then one final question from the student. What would be the major difference between using this approach for business-to-business versus business-to-consumer? So this approach is really intended for a business-to-business audience, meaning you are a business as a freelancer and you're approaching another business or organization. It could be a nonprofit, it could be an association, doesn't matter. I'm calling them organizations, but it could be a business, a company. It's a little harder with individuals because there's not a lot of information out there you can use, and you could really be perceived as spam. Businesses are used to being approached by other businesses about products and services, and they're used to getting email pitches or direct mail pitches. Consumers are a little bit more guarded about their inbox, so you have to be careful there. So this is really intended for a business audience and not so much a consumer. Many of you, many of you target prospects who could be considered, well, they could either be consumers or businesses. You know who you are, and I think it's pretty clear how to modify this approach. It's really not a lot you need to modify, but it's still a business proposition. It's still, a business pitch. It's not a, I can tutor your child, although even that could be used. You just got to be careful how you find these people because, okay, well, how do you know that my child needs help in math, So really intended for a business audience, I guess is the point. All right, this one, let's see here. I'm just reading this one straight from an email. My ideal client would be project managers at design studios that don't have the in-house skills to create WordPress sites from their designs and are looking to subcontract the development and maintenance of their client sites. Now, I don't want to compete with a PSD to HTML/WordPress companies because they offer a more complete package. In this context, could a recent launch of one of their clients' websites be a valid trigger event? And I say absolutely. As long as you feel that is a good entry point for you, a good enough reason to contact them, then go for it. The question, though, becomes, okay, if you contact them at this point, once you find out about that that launch of one of their clients' websites, is that early enough for you to get in the door and develop or maintain that new site for them? We talked about this a little earlier. It might not be. At least, especially with smaller prospects, it might be too late for this specific opportunity, but this could be, if you approach it right, if you use the approach we talk about here, it could impress them enough that they'll say, we already got it covered for this one, but I think you might be a good fit for us for the next one we work on like this. So at least you find a reason to start a conversation with them. So don't be afraid to approach them, even if you know going in that it's a little too late to get in the door with this specific client win or project launch that they have. Second part to this gentleman's question is, he said, I think a valid strategy for monitoring trigger events is to follow the prospect on Twitter, where they are likely to make announcements. What do you think? And we talked about this a little earlier in the call. Absolutely. I didn't talk much about Twitter or Facebook as far as monitoring those for trigger events, but especially for small to mid-sized organizations, they can be great. As I mentioned, many of these companies reveal an incredible amount of information on what they're working on, what they're up to, what they're thinking, and they're just really dying for some engagement with their prospects. You can turn around and use that information to approach them about how you can help them. And it could be very powerful. They'll see that, wow, you really took the time to go in there and learn about us. That's impressive. Nobody else does that. I've gotten emails like that. People said, I've never had anyone do this or approach me this way. That alone will make such a big impression that they can't help but listen to you and check you out a little bit more and give you the time of day. Somebody else who would approach them with a kind of a mass approach wouldn't get that opportunity. Let me see here. There's Okay. The other thing I would do, okay, and I just responded to this gentleman with this answer, but I wanted to read you more of what I told him. I wouldn't limit yourself to Twitter. I would also like them on Facebook and try to connect in LinkedIn as well, if it makes sense to do so. So if you approach them in LinkedIn, one key thing, though, is to make sure not to use the standard boilerplate language that LinkedIn sends to people you're inviting to your network. Write out an actual note, a customized note explaining who you are, and then why you want to connect with them on LinkedIn. That's going to make a much bigger impression. I'd say 90-95% of the requests to connect in LinkedIn that I get are the standard LinkedIn message. So when somebody actually takes the time to write even one sentence that's personalized, that really stands out. Okay, let me see. I had another question here. I think this is the last one. Okay, my question. In developing my value statement, I understand that specificity as to whom I've worked for is better than just saying a big company. But what if one of your greatest successes was helping a company to turn into a less than ethical enterprise, make a lot of money? I'm torn to mention names, but I was a part of a three-man marketing team that took this company from $12 million a year to over $300 million a year in less than 4 years. I'm proud of that, but not the way they conducted business or treated their customers or the efficacy of their products involved. All right, so what do you do here? That's like your biggest success. You're so proud of that growth, you're just not proud of the way they went about it, okay? Couple of things you could do. You could mention the company name anyway if you think most of the unethical practices that you're referring to were internal and they weren't visible to outsiders. So this is something, you know, things that you saw happen that never got out. It's just, you know, it troubled you, but customers or the industry wouldn't be aware of it. So that's one thing you could do. The other, if it's well known that this company is just, you know, not very ethical, is get as specific as you can in your value statement without mentioning the actual company name. So, for example, you could say a leading $300 million a year nutraceuticals manufacturer. I'm just making that up. I don't know what kind of company they are. That alone can be almost as impactful as mentioning the company. And whichever way you go, I would seriously consider mentioning the fact that you helped them go from $12 million to $300 million. That's a huge accomplishment. So either way, whichever approach you take, make sure to mention that. Okay, so those are all the questions we received. Before we closed it, and I want Crystal to tell you about the next call because we are going to have another FAQ call. I wanted to mention something. We're going to send out an email about this a little later today, but we have an unadvertised bonus for you guys regarding email prospecting, and it's something I think it's really going to help with your email efforts. It's a private webinar I'm doing next month. It's just for you guys, just for students of this email prospecting program, and it's called How to Email Important People. And I'm doing this with James Clear, who's the founder of PassivePanda.com. I approached James recently because he's got a very unique system he's developed to approach and start conversations with celebrities, successful entrepreneurs, authors, speakers, you know, people you think, gosh, they're untouchable. Who can ever get a hold of them? He has worked on this for a long time, and he's developed this actual system that works extremely well. And he's been able to start very authentic conversations with these people. These aren't spammy, you know, tricky emails to get people to, you know, write you back, and then you trick them into something else. This is not bait and switch or anything else. This is just a different way of doing it that's been proven to work. And he's got a whole system on how to do this. And I approached him a few weeks ago. I said, man, would you mind spending some time with our students? It's kind of related to the material in this program, but it's not. You're not necessarily using this for prospects. This would be for potential partners and other people who could help your business. And he agreed. So we're doing this July 13th at 2 o'clock Eastern Time. I believe that's a Thursday. It will be about a 45-minute webinar. And again, this is just, it's a private webinar. It's not open to anybody else except for you guys. So we'll be sending out more information later today. I just wanted to give you a heads up. Would love to have you. I think it's going to be some really good stuff. And we will record it, by the way. So if you can't make it live, don't worry. We'll have the recording in the bonus area of the program. So you'll be able to access that two or three days after the webinar event. So, Crystal, I think that's all on my end. You want to close this off?
You bet, Ed. So thank you. And just a quick note before we end this, that we will be scheduling the second Q&A session in late July, in the last couple of weeks of July. So you'll be receiving an email from us within the next 1 to 2 weeks once we finalize that date. So keep your eyes open for that. And as always, I'll also put it on the EPP site where you download the product and access the videos. I'll make sure that that date's listed there as well. So this ends today's Q&A session. I hope you found it useful. Watch for an email for the replay instructions coming on Friday. And that's it. Thanks, everyone. Have a great day.